This KABU program has been made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from Gazelle Natural Fiber Clothing, hosting its 22nd anniversary celebration and the grand opening of Gazelle Full Circle Resale, also featuring 100% natural fiber clothing for women and men. Both events run June 16th through 25th. Gazelle and Full Circle Resale are both located at the corner of Northeast 41st and Fremont. Information at 503-288-3422. This program has also been made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay and Lesbian Community Yellow Pages, providing a wide array of gay-friendly business listings. For more information at 503-230-7701 or www.pdxgayyellowpages.com.
Radio Beyond Borders presents two stories, Gay Immigrants and a Political T-Shirt. First, we will hear from four Asian and Latino gay immigrants who live in Oregon. Then, we will hear from a Kurdish American in California. She said she was assaulted by a poll worker for wearing a political T-shirt. I'm your host and producer, Mia Kim.
My name is Enrique Andrade. The first time that I became aware that I had an attraction towards men was when I was 6 years old. I had a lot of cousins that were older, and sometimes we had to take showers together, so I was always curious as to what the big boys and their bodies and how they were changing and all that, and I realized that there was an attraction there. And
my nickname is Hayden. I found out I was gay when I was about 10 or 11. One of the things male do a lot is masturbate. And I know what I think about when I do that kind of thing.
My name is Ricardo Martinez. Since like 14 years old, I just feel attracted more to males than to females.
My name is Sam Wong. Coming to terms with it, probably when I was about 15 or 16, that's when in my head I thought to myself, oh, I like men, or I'm gay. I mean, I thought back to early childhood memories of when I was a kid in China. I knew that something was different about me, but I couldn't really put, you know, wrap my head around it to think, oh, I'm different or I'm gay. Because, you know, back then when you're a child, you don't really understand what it is.
A lot of people knew that I was gay before I understood that. I was teased a lot. Because I didn't want to take martial arts when I was little. And my cousins would say, well, you take ballet lessons. So, you know, I was stigmatized as being gay even before that, or effeminate.
In Vietnam, I didn't think anybody else having this thought as I did. Because nobody said anything, and nobody discussed about anything, and nobody even discussed about heterosexual sex. It's a very, very conservative community, and more so with communism there. So I never told a soul, and I didn't think that anybody else had the same feeling that way, because only after I came to America that I found out that other people had the same feeling, so I'm not alone.
The concept of gay, there are several words, maricón, mariposa, puto. Maricón deals with someone who's very effeminate, sort of queenie. Mariposa, sort of like the same thing, someone who's very queenie. Puto, it's a word that is used for a male whore, and also is used in a derogative sense to mean someone who's cowardly and who would stab you in the back. So I became very aware of all the negative stereotypes that were played out in Mexican society, and see, it's not acceptable to be gay or to live that lifestyle openly. However, there's a lot of bisexual men, or men who have sex with men, but who do not consider themselves gay in Mexico. And like in every repressive Catholic country, there are shadow worlds in which people live in the shadows of society as lovers on the side to successful men.
When I had my first relationship with another male, it was an older person. He was probably like 40 and I was like 15. He was a married man, I guess bisexual. And so when we were having our sexual relationship, we were pretty much doing it in his office. And I don't think I never let my parents know about that. And one day I met his wife and I knew about his kids. But I think also the wife knew about him, so that's why she wasn't saying anything.
I knew that I was different when I came to this country when I was 13 and when I began hitting puberty and all the changes that come along with that. I became aware that I had an attraction towards men that I kept very hidden. And, you know, when you're a teenager and you begin experimenting, you find yourself in situations. For instance, my first experience was with a boy from the swim team in high school. And that was extremely confusing because we were just kind of like between being boys and teenagers. So, you know, 15 years old, you hear about sex, you hear everybody talking about sex, but you don't know what it is until it happens. And when it happens, it's just so confusing. We had that and he never talked to me ever again. So it was rather sad. And because it happened with another boy, I didn't feel like I could tell anybody.
When I was in college, I was having this feeling toward a college roommate living across the hall from me. They were not homosexual, they were straight men. But not only they were physically attractive, they were also playing sport, and they were at Dean Lee's. They were really smart. So the desire was a combination of physical attraction and admiration.
I have loved. My heart has been broken. I've broken a heart.
I had a female roommate, and I knew about her and about her boyfriend, and they broke up, and we started hanging out more, going to the movies and doing things a lot more, you know, and I kind of fell in love with her. We lived together for like 4 years, has a boyfriend and girlfriend relationship.
Be as straight as possible. I'm going to be, you know, a conservative Republican who wants to get married and have a pregnant wife and everything. And, you know, that's, you can only maintain that facade for so long. And at 19 years, I'm out of the closet in college. And I said, you know what? I just can't pretend anymore. I'm not happy pretending to be someone that I'm not, and I cannot hide.
I only decided to be honest about myself about 3 years ago. Because there was something about September 11 is a factor of this. So September 11 told me that life is short, so you got to be not living in fear. But I selectively telling the truth to some people, but not everyone.
I feel more confident now with my mom. When I was growing up, I didn't feel that much confident because we are a big family. I have 6 sisters and 2 other brothers. And of course, she was the only one raising us. I just thought that it was going to be like very hard for her to know that I was growing up gay and was having to take care of my other brothers and sisters. That's what made me move out of my mom's house.
My parents don't know about my status yet, and I consciously chose to spare them from knowing about it so that they wouldn't have to deal with it. Like, because if they know the truth, they will have to agonizing whether to tell their relative. I know how hard it is for me to keep a secret, so I don't want to burden them. And they're both on Medicare, and they're dealing with some diabetes.
I was 19 years old. I came home from college after my freshman year, and I think I just got really tired of trying to hide it from them. Some of my friends were gay and lesbian, and so I would invite them over to the house, and I really didn't try to hide it. And I just figured, you know, they would probably figure it out. And they kind of did, and so finally they just asked, you know, Sam, are you gay? And I said, yeah, and of course that didn't go over well, because even though they saw it, the images of it, you know, their own son,
they were just really, really upset, and we really didn't talk for about 3 or 4 days.
And it was very hard to tell my parents. He asked me whether I had homosexual tendencies, and, you know, we had a good discussion, but he had already a few drinks in him, so, I mean, like, the next day when he sobered up, he took everything back that he had said, and my mother, she had a nervous breakdown, basically, and wanted me to go down to Mexico to check in a hospital and get myself fixed. So needless to say, I didn't go back to Mexico for about 2 years. But, you know, I was putting myself through college, so there was not that danger of, oh, they're going to pull their money away, because I already had been independent from then since I was 18. As far as community, I found a lot of wonderful gay and lesbian and bisexual and even transgender students at the university that became my support network. And created lifelong friendships out of that circle of friends, and they helped me stay sane, basically. My family of choice.
I don't think that any parent would wish that their child was gay, because I think that, again, lesbian life is just much more difficult than someone who is straight, for various reasons. And I think there's a lot of parental guilt on that part, you know, because I think that a part of them feels that they are responsible for the fact that I'm gay. And what I'm trying to explain to them over the years is that this is something innate, at least that's what I believe, and it's not something that you're groomed to be. I mean, I think that they blame themselves that for the fact that they brought me here and that's what turned me into a gay man. And the way that I'm trying to explain to them that, you know, is that even if I were still living in China today and I never came to America, I would still be gay.
I let my mom know what I do, the gay groups that I have volunteered to. She has talked to me about other gay relatives that I have. And when we talk about, you know, what I do, she accepts the conversation. Before, she didn't accept that she was, like, trying to change the subject. But now she doesn't.
My mom has told my aunt that I'm gay. And my mom has told that some of her best friends actually that I'm gay. And I'm very happy for my parents. They can actually say the word gay, because it's such a taboo word, you know, for someone to say, at least in their mind. But I'm very happy that they've at least come to terms somewhat with it, that they can say that I have a gay son and be sort of okay with it.
It's essentially two words. One was gay people, you know, you go to gay bond and you say, oh, okay, these people are gay. When I step out of it, it's a straight word. Like, nobody knows that I'm gay. Because appearance-wise, I look normal. I don't look gay. I act normal. When I meet people in the normal world, well, normal is quote-unquote, they always assume that I'm straight. So I'm just going along with that, and I never try to correct them.
I'm getting tired of playing the game of using gender-neutral pronouns when talking about a partner or a person that I'm dating. So if someone asks me directly, are you gay, I will answer directly.
It really is not that big of a deal. I mean, I don't think. I mean, at least that's been my experience, that I haven't had an adverse reaction to coworkers knowing that I am. Sometimes they may be a little taken aback by, you know, because they don't understand why you have to tell them. But to me, you know, if you have, you know, a picture of your wife or husband on your desk or you wear a wedding ring, you're coming out as being a straight person every day. It's just that when I say that I'm different or, you know, I choose not to hide it, then that's when, you know, they sort of turn around and accuse me of being someone who wants to advertise their personal sexual life when that's not my intention at all.
I have felt discriminated at work. Here in Portland, that's where I started going to clubs, and it's a gay club. And many of them were going to the club, so they see me at the club and they go, oh, what are you doing here? I go, well, the same thing you're doing, having fun. So the ones that are straight, they'll be making fun of.
There is racism in the community, the gay community, and in Portland, I think it's palpable. I was standing in a bar, in a bar here in Portland, and I was standing in line, and three guys behind me were talking about, oh, yeah, and I was here, and then, you know, but they were telling me a story about being in a place, and they said, oh, and then, of course, there was a greasy Mexican guy. And I'm thinking, you know what? I stopped, and I turned around, and I looked at them, and they're like, shh. You know, they kind of pretended nothing happened. And that just disappointed me, made me very uncomfortable. I mean, it hurts. It hurts at the core of your being, because being Hispanic, being Latino, you might pretend to be someone else, but you can't change that. You cannot change who you are, nor should you.
It's been a few times that I walk downtown with another friend that he's gay, and he'll be more noticeable. If they'll go driving, they'll say something racist, like gay beaners, stuff like that. And that's really hurtful.
In the gay war, there is a discrimination against Asian, because in the media, we are bombarded with this image of what the gay man is supposed to look. You know, you look Caucasian, have all this Caucasian feature. So where their potential date, most other gay men would say, you're Asian? No, I'm into white. I'm into Caucasian. And that's because of the ingrained discrimination or racial component to it. But some rare segment of gay population are interested or open-minded to all race.
Gay community with this ageist, sexist, and racist tendencies has been a problem for me as a Latino man. Not to say that every gay person is racist or sexist or ageist or whatever, but we do have that as a reflection of the broader society. And if you look at gay magazines, I mean, the ideal aesthetic of what a gay man looks like is almost virtually impossible to attain if you're not Anglo-Saxon, 6'1", blue-eyed, and blonde, with a wonderful Abercrombie and Fitch body. I mean, you know, I'm 5'6" on a good day, and, you know, brown eyes, brown hair, and have a lot of really positive attributes, but none that are sellable in, you know, the media.
In the outside of the gay war, Asian gay men don't have the backup of the Asian community. In essence, in the Asian community, we have kind of a don't ask, don't tell policy, and just assume that this thing doesn't exist somehow. It's a mirror of what we experience in our own country, like Vietnam or China or Korea.
Some people said that a gay person is being made gay. I don't think that is true. I just think that we are born like that.
Follow your heart, Ken, doing the right thing. But what is the right thing? Is it the right thing is doing what you really want, or conform to the society, what the society wants you to do?
I don't want to be a caricature of what gay means or what the straight world thinks gay is. I need to be myself. And whatever that means is only something someone that I can create for myself, not something that society can impose upon me.
I think that a lot of people think that, for instance, if you allow gays and lesbians to get married, that it would somehow crumble, you know, the foundation of society. And I think that it's just a part of not knowing what people are like.
Marriage equality has to remain at the forefront of our fight. But more importantly, we cannot ignore the fact that, you know, there's a lot of mental health problems that we have failed to address with those basic mental health issues of the depression that comes along with, you know, finding that you're completely different than your peers in the teenage years and not being able to talk to anybody.
Find someone, you know, that you think who you can trust, you know, a close friend, you know. I usually find, like, a cousin in the family that you think is accepting is a good choice, because you don't live with them, but they're family, and so they can kind of feel it out for you to see how to deal with the family angle. But I would say most of my friends probably came out first to their friends before they came out to their family. I think that's a pretty typical course, because you're afraid of rejection from your family.
To the homosexual community, well, what I see is that on some of the websites, some people comfortably putting on their profile saying that they're gay, they're bisexual, etc., when they are teenager. So they are comfortable because the society, they feel that the society become more open toward gay and lesbian community. Now, what they benefit right now is from the efforts from the past generation of gay and bisexual. So my advice to them is not to be selfish and doing their part to spread the message saying we are just an effective member contributing to the society just like anybody else.
Nothing other people do, nothing the law do, it will change what we are. No matter if they put a law against it, I mean, they're not going to change us. And it's not that we are, you know, aliens or people from outer space or there is something wrong on our brains.
I'm normal. I have a normal job just like anybody.
The thing that is different is that when society thinks of a gay couple, a male gay couple, okay, who is the man and who is the woman? You cannot put that dynamic there because they're both men.
I think for the heterosexual community, they shouldn't pass judgment until they know someone. And chances are they probably already know someone.
Get to know us. And, you know, we're just, you know, people like everybody else trying to lead our lives. And, you know, it's not something to fear.
Raya Sayadi, during the election day, you know, election for the primaries, election for the governor of California and all this other stuff. I went to vote, and as I entered the polling station, which is behind my house, San Ramon, and I went inside, they gave me my ballot. I went to the booth, was in the middle of circling my ballot. I feel bang on my left shoulder, and a person is screaming at me. She's on the cell phone. She's saying, I'm arresting you. I'm calling police. You broke the law. And I was totally shocked. I don't know what she is talking about. Here, my arm got stuck. My neck is hurting because I have impingement disorder. And she startled me, and she's scaring me like this, and she's threatening me to tear my ballot. She says, I'm illegal. She's wording all these words. And I said, excuse me? And then she's saying, police officer, she's causing chaos. She's the one who's screaming her lungs out and her eyes were wide open. She was so furious. I never thought one person to have so much hate over a T-shirt, which was not even meant for her. You know, it doesn't say profanity. It doesn't say anything. It's a T-shirt. In the front, it had George W. Bush's picture and Dick Cheney. And George W. Bush in front, it says, who in the hell cares? What do you think? And it says, 4th of July picnic, George W. Bush tells a U.S. citizen. And in the back, it says, impeach Bush and Cheney for corporate-related crime. This is for the Enron things, and that's why those Enron boys hopefully going to get their time. And all those workers could get some of their money back. And by now, I am thinking she's screaming. She says she has a profanity T-shirt that says impeach George Bush and Cheney. And that's the wrong thing she is wearing. She's screaming, and I went outside, and I was asking that gentleman, what's her name? What's her name? He would not give me the name till the police arrived. And then she comes outside. When the police arrive, she's showing off like, I said, okay, give me your name. I'm going to leave. That's how the whole thing started. She is the head of an election poll, and she's the one who's supposed to be making the place go smoothly, equally. And I told the reporter and the guy outside, I said, why she's preventing me from vote and why she's hitting me. He says, well, ma'am, she made a mistake. He said at that time she made a mistake, right? When the police arrived, when I told them she hit me, he says, well, it was just a tap. All of a sudden, now, you know what they have turned it around to say? Oh, it's not the T-shirt. The whole thing was over the T-shirt. And now they say, well, it's because she took more than 10 minutes. I don't think I even took 10 minutes. And then when the police officer arrived, the first one was He came and he liked the T-shirt, and then he was the first one to arrive. And this gentleman, his name was Tom, he told him, well, there was misunderstanding, there is nothing. And I said, my son has been waiting for me for half an hour, and this lady hit me. My neck is stuck. My arms, you know, I can't lift it over my head. And she didn't let me finish my ballot. He says, what do you want to do, ma'am? I said, I want to be able to vote. And he says, well, do you want to go back in and cover your T-shirt and vote? I said, they should have told me from beginning to cover my T-shirt or I can't have that T-shirt. I said, this is not right anyway. I know I could wear that T-shirt because, you know, I have... This has nothing to do with the people who are on the ballot. Dick Cheney and Bush are not running for election. So I left to go pick up my son, and then I went to the police station to report what was happening to me for a battery and assault of the lady who did that to me. Well, I called the police officer. An hour and a half later, they arrived almost. I called back again. I said, where are the police officers? And they said, well, they have gone to the poll first to talk to her. I'm the one who's reporting assault and battery, and they have gone to speak to her and her friends. Do you see how biased that is already? When they arrive to me, they're supposed to take a report, correct? The police officer is telling me, we don't have time for you. We already heard it all from them. I said, why she's hitting me? That's wrong. And he says, ma'am, she was doing her job. And I said, she's supposed to hit me? That's part of her job? And then she says, oh, they told me she tapped you twice. That's, the whole thing is so biased and so saddening. And I leave. Then they have gone and reported this reporting of a police and their own things to the newspaper to cover themselves up. And then later, after the reporter has taken their report the next day, he calls me up in the evening. He says, I already took their side. I want to see what happened to you. I said to him, please, since you're going to have an article in the paper, I said, put down, please, that United States is becoming like Iraq, becoming dictatorship, that you cannot wear a T-shirt. I said, that's what saddens me for my son to grow up here. And do you know what he wrote instead? He, they just said, Sraya, Iraqi woman. And because of her skin color, and plus she is saying if it's better off, she will go back in Iraq and vote. And then after the article came out, the phone rings, and it's a guy threatening me with lots of profanities about Iraqi people. So I called the police, and they came. He was taking a report, correct? And then friends and my attorneys and those, they took me out of the house for a week. I was gone. And we were checking the phone calls at home. And the next day again, another person now has called, and he's saying, you're welcome back to go back to Iraq. We don't need people like you in my world, in our world. And I told my friends, and I said, what is their world? Their world now has become Iraq too, so I can't go to that world. So what's my world? I can't be here, I can't be there, where I can be.
You have been listening to Gay Immigrants and a Political T-Shirt by Mie Kim for KBOO Radio as part of Radio Beyond Borders.